Coming up on Tech News Today, the next iPad mini retina display is in superposition. Does it exist or not? Or both at the same time? Secrets of Motorola's X8 processor are revealed, and Google gets nosy in your neighborhood. But you'll like it. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, August 1st, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT8. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy, iPhone, and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we take the tech news, put it in a blender, split it out as a bunch of discussion stories in the news fuse so that you know more stuff. Let's start with that news fuse. If you've been struggling to make profiles on Netflix ever since they showed up on the Apple TV, struggle no more. Netflix has officially brought back individual user profiles. The revamped feature allows up to 5 profiles per account and will show personalized recommendations to each. Each profile can also link to a separate Facebook account. Netflix suggests using some of your 5 profiles for moods like action movie night or combinations like family night. The feature will roll out slowly over the next 2 weeks to all users, and some users may already have some profiles in there carried over from their old-timey DVD accounts.
To retina or not to retina? That is the question that anonymous sources familiar with the matter are trying to answer. The ones talking to the Wall Street Journal say a Retina Mini is expected to go into mass production by the end of this year and may feature screens produced by Japan Display and LG as well as Samsung. Also may come in a selection of colors for the back cover. However, 9to5 Mac reports on a hidden file in the iOS 7 SDK, which indicates the next iPad mini would not have a retina display, but both rumors agree that the new mini will reportedly keep the 7.9-inch screen.
So either it'll have a screen or no screen. No, that's not true.
It'll have a screen.
It'll have a screen with pixels. After some discussions with Microsoft, Google will continue to support its sync service for Windows Phone until December 31st of this year. The service was originally going to be discontinued in January of 2013. Then Google extended that to July 31st. And now we've got this latest drop-dead date of December 31st. Google Sync service allowed Windows Phone devices to sync calendar and contact information. Microsoft is currently rolling out CalDAV and CardDAV support to Windows Phone. So when Google Sync does go away, you'll still have your contacts and calendar info.
It's never going away. As promised, Billy Lau, Yongjing Zhang, and Chengyu Song of the Georgia Institute of Technology showed off their hack to access an iPhone plugged into a modified charger and inject code. The bad news when we first heard of this demonstration a few months ago was that all public charging spots could become suspect. The good news now is Apple said the issue has been fixed in the latest beta of iOS 7.
Google's Chromecast Internet TV adapter already works with Hulu content, but Hulu Plus subscribers are about to get things like complete past seasons of TV shows and other goodies, you know, like regular old Hulu Plus. Hulu can't stop users from using the Cast feature to stream free Hulu.com video from a Chrome browser to a TV, but Hulu says it's enhancing its iOS and Android apps to take advantage of the native capabilities of the Chromecast device for smoother playback and better remote control capabilities.
NSA Director General Keith Alexander gave a keynote at Black Hat yesterday. Alexander explained the legal basis for the NSA's authority to collect data and that the NSA does not collect content such as text messages, voice messages, or locational information. Apparently, his talk was met with applause in support of the NSA at times and profane heckling as well.
The USB 3.0 promoter group has finalized the spec for USB 3.1. Stop yawning. That point upgrade is going to double the USB bandwidth to 10 gigabits per second. Got your attention now. And it'll still support USB 2.0. Developer sessions for the spec will begin August 21st, and chipsets are expected from the usual suspects like Intel and AMD. For those of you who are enjoying watching FireWire history repeat itself, Thunderbolt 2 is expected to hit 20 gigabits per second this year, but receive less uptake.
Quartz reports Google is testing out local news cards for Google Now and is in the experimental testing phase, getting feedback from users about whether or not it should go live for everyone on Android or when. For example, your local news would tell you things like nearby crimes or restaurant openings tailored to your specific interests and also your geolocated coordinates. This would be in addition to Now info you already have, like flight schedules, transit stops, travel estimated times of arrival, and weather.
In advance of Motorola lifting the gag order on talking about the Moto X today, Motorola's Senior Vice President of Engineering Iqbal Arshad gave some more details on the mysterious X8 processing system first mentioned at Verizon's Droid announcement. The X8 has a Snapdragon S4 Pro system on a chip working with two non-ARM digital signal processors created by Motorola. One of these DSPs acts as a processor when the phone is asleep, delivering notifications. The other handles noise cancellation and voice. Motorola says the two DSPs can work with any processor, not just Qualcomm, and save a lot on battery life.
The Associated Press reports that German news sites are still allowing their content to appear on Google News, even after lobbying for stricter German copyright law that would remove their content from Google. Earlier this year, Google said it would only display information from those who opted in to have free snippets appear on Google News. One publisher, Axel Springer AG, says the decision to opt into Google News is a temporary measure and its approval could be revoked at any time.
We will do it anytime when you least suspect it. And then people will never get our news. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace. You know how much I like Squarespace. I was using them yesterday to update some Sword and Laser stuff. We use them for swordandlaser.com. It's the all-in-one platform, makes it super easy. I used to kind of hate going in and updating the calendar section of the Sword and Laser website because it was just like, oh, I gotta do all this coding. Not with Squarespace. It's drag and drop. And just tweak, tweak, highlight, put in a link, boom. You don't even have to press a button. You just press enter and it goes on in. Now I'd like to check out some sites you've built with Squarespace. Send a tweet with a link to your Squarespace website. Use the hashtag TNT Squarespace. We'll take a look. We've had a few people do this already and there's some cool stuff out there. We might even choose your Squarespace site to mention in a future episode. If you don't know why to love Squarespace, well, there's tons of reason. They're always improving their platform. They have award-winning designs. They'll make your site look beautiful. It's, like I mentioned, easy to use. Inexpensive. It's only $8 a month. It includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. It's mobile ready. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience, SEO optimized, hosting included. Squarespace takes care of the hosting, so you don't have to mess with that stuff if you don't want to do it. They do it all. But the best reason to like Squarespace is to try it. You don't even have to give them a credit card. Start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code TNT8 because it's August, and you'll get 10% off. And show your support for Tech News Today, which we like. Don't forget to send a tweet with the hashtag TNT Squarespace, and we could choose your Squarespace site to mention on a future episode. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. All right, joining us today, the newly married Patrick Beja is with us from France. Congratulations, Patrick.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My wedding was awesome. Just to give you a short idea of how awesome it was, some of my friends created a Modern Family spoof with my parents, and they showed it at the dinner. That's
no
how
kidding?
Awesome it was.
Wow, yes, that's pretty cool, yeah. Actually.
And that was one of the awesome things that happened there.
I see that married life is treating you well so far.
Very well. I couldn't be happier.
All right, let's get in. Let's get the Apple rumors out of the way off the top, Sarah Lane. What's all this Retina confusion?
Fine, Tom. Let's start with that. Well, it's interesting because yesterday I read a report from 9 to 5 Mac that said, yeah, it looks like there's not going to be a Retina version of the iPad mini this year, which seems a little scary for Apple, especially considering that the new Nexus 7 has everybody really excited. Obviously, it has a nicer screen than the Mini from last year. And that pointed to some code in iOS 7 that seemed to point to a non-Retina version. However, Wall Street Journal says they've got sources that say Apple is, in fact, working on a high-resolution version of the iPad mini with components from Samsung. It would be the same size, possibly different back colors, which kind of goes in line with possibly a new lower-cost iPhone. We've been hearing rumors about different colors with that as well. And that Apple plans to use screens not just from Samsung, but also from Sharp and LG. Apple has relationships with both of those other companies. However, Apple decided to add Samsung, and probably reluctantly, because it wanted to make sure that it had an adequate supply of screens, which is sort of the same story we've been hearing about over the last year, is that Apple and Samsung obviously famously don't get along very well. They like to sue each other quite a bit. Apple would probably love to not have to rely on Samsung for its components. But at the same time, Samsung has such streamlining manufacturing processes that Apple can't really go away just yet. So let's just say that, you know, for the sake of argument, the iPad mini is going to be Retina, and we are going to see a new model this year. Patrick, do you think that this possibly is in response to the Nexus 7, or do you think that this was planned all along and the analysts just had it wrong?
That's difficult to say. I guess they've been planning it for a long time. I don't know that they managed to put it in production for this year, but I don't think they saw the Nexus 7, you know, a couple of days ago and said, oh, the Retina iPad mini that we planned for next year, let's move it to this year. I think if they could have done that, if it's what they're doing, they would have done it already, because absolutely everybody is waiting. Well, maybe not everybody, but a lot of people are waiting for the iPad mini Retina. I think that it was a real surprise how popular the smaller iPad became. I don't know about you guys, but everyone around me who's tried the iPad mini prefers it to the iPad, large in most cases. So I really think they need the iPad mini in that way to sort of become their flagship product. And also what that will allow them to do is to offer the perfect entry product. We know that the Android tablets are becoming better and better every, you know, by the week. And that allows them to lower the price on a super good, attractive product while, you know, keeping the more expensive products with different feature sets. So I think they were working on it. They have been working on it for a long time.
Yeah, I think it fits the pattern of what Apple does, right? I mean, they generally are a little slower to bring things in, but they like to make things pretty. So it didn't surprise me when the mini came out without the Retina display, even though everybody wanted it, because I'm like, well, the next one will have the Retina display. So all these rumors are kind of amusing to me, although it makes me wonder if Apple trying to get away from Samsung is actually getting in the way of them doing the right thing for the product. And that would be very un-Apple-like.
Apple and Samsung's relationship is far from normal, it seems like. But they've been working to get together for a number of years. The Apple Cinema displays have been Samsung displays for years. Samsung parts are all over MacBook Pros and MacBooks and pretty much anything. So the fact that they're suing each other over patents on one side of their face, on their other face, they're just like, hey, we're buddies and we're going to make a lot of money. Samsung obviously wants to make that Apple money as well. When Apple upgraded the iPad, the original one, though, they didn't switch to a Retina display till what, iPad 3, was it? Because
iPad 3. Yeah,
iPad 3. So I think they probably were scrambling to try to not use Samsung at first. They were trying to see if they had enough yield from LG, Sharp, and these other display companies to see, can they put out an iPad mini with the amount of numbers they probably will have because of the demand? Can they do this without Samsung? And I'm pretty sure what probably happened is that Samsung's deal probably went through now fairly close to the launch, because they're like, look, we have to go with these guys if we wanted to truly have a Retina one, because they would be seen as far lagging behind when that rumored Kindle Fire HD comes around. Higher res displays, the Nexus 7 high res display, they can't have something that looks like something from 2 years ago.
I like to think of this story in a panic mode sort of a way, just because it's kind of fun. I feel like Apple probably said, all right, we're going to put an A6 processor in the next iPad mini. We'll do iPad mini Retina in 2014. That's our roadmap. We're sticking to it. All of a sudden, they're completely blown out of the water by competing tablets that people really like that give them absolutely no option to do that. They wouldn't sell any iPad minis. It's like, faster processor. Are people really complaining all that much? Like, my iPad mini doesn't work fast enough. No, it's the screen. It's the Retina. That has been the number one complaint since day one, myself included. So I like to think that Apple was like, let's get Samsung in the, and let's churn out these. We're gonna compete again. Ah, pandemonium.
Sounds just like Tim Cook in my head. That's what he sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, any kind of new product release at this point would just be a revelation from Apple. It seems like it's been forever. We are going to get a new Motorola phone today, the Moto X. In fact, I believe Leo Laporte is going to unbox one or at least reveal details about it, something like that, once the embargo lifts later today. He rarely does this, but he did go under embargo to get details about the Moto X. So if you're watching live, stay tuned for that.
You mean gag order, right, Tom?
I do mean gag order.
Okay, actually, there we go.
I was intentionally not saying gag order that time to vary it. But thanks for, you know.
I just appreciated it earlier.
Thank you. Motorola X8 processing system, though, does have some details out. They talked about it when they unleashed all those droids at the Verizon thing. But we mentioned it in the news fuse. Get a little more your head wrapped around this. Like we mentioned, it's a Qualcomm Snapdragon system on a chip. That's dual core. There's four cores for graphics. And then there's these two digital signal processors. One is called the contextual computing processor. It does sense and touch and display. And it's the primary processor in standby. So when you have the phone off and it gives you those notifications that you may have seen, it's kind of a cool thing. That's what's doing that. There's also a natural language processor, and that does Motorola's own noise cancellation. They're not using something common like Audience for that. Motorola is being a little cagey about what these DSPs are. They say that they were spec'd by Motorola, but they were designed and fabbed outside of Motorola, and that they're not ARM. So we don't know who's making these processors. They can theoretically work with any CPU. They'll easily work with another Qualcomm, but if they want to put these in other phones, they can be flexible on the actual CPU there. And Motorola says they get 50% better performance on gaming battery rundown than competitors. And if they didn't have these two signal processors, they would need two additional batteries. So this is a pretty interesting chip advance, kind of mysterious. Patrick, what do you make of it?
I think this is actually very interesting because the only kind of advance we're going to get in these devices nowadays is going to be those sideways, weird changes. In this case, you have a machine that is designed to sort of operate when it's asleep to keep the main respiratory functions going. And that way you can save battery. And battery is basically the only thing that is... that people are still craving for on mobile, you know, on phones, I think. No one really, really needs more power or that kind of thing. And the other thing that is interesting is innovation through, you know, feature innovation through hardware design. And that's what we're seeing with the other one, which apparently, if the rumors are true, is enabling the device to be always listening to you when you want to say, okay, what was it? Okay, Google something, or okay, Moto X, and to answer you even when you're not having it activated. That's a really cool feature. I don't know how useful it's going to be, but it sounds cool. And that wouldn't be possible without that kind of hardware design that they're apparently custom making for the device.
Yeah, Dennis Woodside back at the All Things D conference talked about how the Moto X would have all these sensors, they'd be low powered and you'd be able to get a lot more battery life out of this device. I think to try to differentiate these phones at this point, it's just, okay, every phone is kind of the same. They have the slab form factor. You've got this touchscreen. It's got a great display or not, and it's got a great camera. If somebody can promise all day battery life or like 2 days of battery life with a smartphone with all the functionality of a clean install of Android, that could actually make it an actual difference maker in the market because as opposed to going, okay, what's that? It's the S3 or S4. That's the HTC One. They're all kind of the same. But if you could say this phone lasts for days and you still get all your data, that could make a dent in the smartphone marketplace in the U.S.
Motorola says that they're actually using stock Android, which is interesting because they weren't talking about the Moto X specifically when they talked to Sasha Segan from PC Mag about this. So that implies that they're going to have stock Android on the Moto X because the droids that they announced already aren't exactly stock Android. So that'll be an interesting thing as well if Motorola comes out with that Google Nexus-like phone, even though it's not a Nexus, with the stock system. And they say the stock system is all they need to drive those notifications and manage those processors the way they're doing. So we will keep an eye on that. We'll be talking more about the Moto X tomorrow, I'm sure. Meanwhile, Google also in the news for local. That's a gap right now on the web, is really hyper-local news.
Yeah, finding things locally is almost impossible. According to Quartz, Google's testing out that local news card for Google Now that Sarah mentioned, the News Fuse. The tests are being done within Google itself. There's no beta outside the company. It's only Google people using it. Quartz was told of the existence of this during an interview with Johanna Wright, VP of Search and Assist at Google. She says that Google is testing a very local, hyper-local news card, that was her language there, that would teach you things about your neighborhood. And right now, it's live only in an experimental version. Patrick, there's a lot of companies who've tried local. We've seen, like, NBC's tried it, AOL has tried it with Patch. Microsoft has Bing local search. It seems like nobody's really cracked local. You think something with a Google Now integration could possibly do it?
It seems like if anyone can do it, Google can. And I certainly, you know, want them to achieve it. It's one of the areas, ironically, that the web hasn't really covered yet. As you were saying, no one managed to make it work. And I'm sure that, you know, some people are going to look at this and say, you know, in my time, we used to talk to people and to have, you know, to talk to the person in the shop there. And you know what I say to those people? Shut up, Grandpa. This is the future. That's what I say. No, seriously, I mean, this is, it's so
I have an issue
silly.
With that.
It's so silly that, you know, I can't fire up my phone. I mean, I can fire it up and get news from all over the world. I don't know what's happening in the next street. It's not that I need, you know, the hourly report, but if there's a cool new restaurant that's opening or something, it should work on my phone as well. It's silly that it doesn't. So
yeah, there
yes,
are
I want this.
Variety of services and blogs and stuff that I use regularly because I like local news. You know, I read about local restaurants on Eater. Sometimes I fire up Foursquare to see if there's a highly rated cafe nearby me. There's a service called Nextdoor that's about actually knowing your neighbors. But that's not all in one place. And it also gets problematic if I am traveling. So let's say I'm in some neighborhood in New York City. Well, I don't really know where I am. And all of my settings for these blogs and services that I like back home don't really apply anymore. So I think Google Now, if it could update in real time the kind of local information that I'm interested in based on where I am, and you know, it served up good information and felt really seamless, I think that's just the next logical step in all of this. Because local does matter. I mean, you don't want all of your information to be coming in to be global. It's kind of like Twitter trending topics. I don't really care about the global ones. I like my local ones.
I get my hyper-local news right now from Twitter, right? I subscribe to a Twitter account called Venice311, which is a woman who just, because she loves doing it, monitors the police radio and posts about what's going on in the Venice and Mar Vista neighborhoods of Los Angeles. That's the kind of thing you didn't even get that from local radio or local news. Like if the sirens run through your neighborhood, the local radio was probably not going to talk about it unless it was some amazing, like, you know, bank heist or something like that. So if you want to find out, like, what was that weird crack that happened the other day? You know, have there been a rash of burglaries in my neighborhood? That stuff like that. It's really hard to find. So if Google can crack that by saying, hey, there are these people talking about it, right? We're all talking about what happens around us. Well, if they can figure out how to pull that together and make it relevant to you, that would be a really amazing service.
Yeah, I think Google Now is actually the best place to put that kind of information because you're already seeing your favorite sports team show up there. You're seeing your commute time. You're seeing a bunch of information that you're kind of used to have that kind of morning newspaper feel of here's some information that's happening near you as opposed to like here are some things related to a search you did. I think that would be huge. It's just this. If they integrated it into a different service or if it was a separate service by itself, I don't think it would do very well. Google Now, I think, is the perfect home for something like this.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, Gazelle, which is the perfect way to get some cash out of your old gadgets. There's more phones coming out all the time, more tablets coming out all the time. And if you're like, yeah, you know what? I'd kind of like those if you're tempted or if you're like, no, I'm going to get that new tablet. I'm going to get that new phone. You might want to subsidize it. Save some money by selling your old one that you don't need anymore. You've got an old Samsung Galaxy S3. You've got an old iPhone. You got tablets that Gazelle is buying, Samsung, Google Nexus, Kindle Fire, Microsoft Surface, and Asus tablets in a lot of cases. Go to gazelle.com. It's hassle-free. You're going to go to the website. You're going to type in the gadget you're thinking of getting rid of. You're going to tell them the condition. They're going to give you a quote. And then you get to keep that quote that they gave you for 30 days, right? That you lock it in while you decide what to do, when you want to send the gadget. It's all up to you. They give you a month. Then when you send it to them, they turn it around in a couple of days. You get paid by PayPal. You get paid by cash. You get paid by Amazon gift certificate. In fact, I think you get a 5% bonus with the Amazon gift certificate. So you got to go to Gazelle if you're getting rid of gadgets and you want it to be easy. What's your iPhone, Samsung, and other Android smartphone worth? Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com and find out. Sell your used Samsung Galaxy iPhone or tablet today at gazelle.com. That's G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. And we thank them for their continuing support of Tech News Today. Give them props for that while you're at it. We got a new camera out for taking selfies, Sarah Lane.
Yeah, well, that's what the headline says, because everybody likes to talk about selfies. But this is from Canon. It's called the Vixia Mini. And it's kind of like a mini camcorder webcam hybrid. So you've got a single front cam, and it's sort of a fisheye lens. It gives you a 160-degree angle of view for movies, or 170 degrees for photos. Kind of like a GoPro, but this isn't marketed towards action and adventure and waterproof and all of that stuff. This is kind of just for close-ups and wide-angle stuff. The close-up mode actually narrows the focal length to 35 millimeters. So this is better for, yes, some sort of a selfie video. 12-megapixel CMOS sensor can record a high bit rate MP4 files in 1080p. Then there's some neat bells and whistles, high speed and slow motion recording options. Everything gets stored to a micro SD card, which is sold separately. You can, with built-in Wi-Fi, upload quickly to YouTube or Facebook. And there's also a live stream feature. This is kind of interesting. So you can record straight to an Android or iOS device or control the camera remotely. It's missing some stuff that actual more of a prosumer level might want, like an external mic jack, although there's some interesting audio scenes that allow you to adjust if you're recording music versus talking versus something with a lot of ambient noise, that sort of thing. And it comes with a 2.7-inch dot resolution touchscreen, a built-in stand that'll elevate it up to about 60 degrees. You got a tripod mount on the bottom. Coming in September for $300, you can get it in white or black. I read all of this and I was like, who would want this? But then I remember it wasn't that long ago that I thought flip cam was the greatest thing since sliced bread. Wow, look at this tiny camera that can record HD video. And then that sort of went the way of the dodo when smartphones all got their own video recording modes. But this camera is certainly taking it up a notch. Do you think that there's room for a mini camcorder standalone device, Patrick? What do you think?
No, absolutely not. This is a ridiculous device. I mean, sure, I'm sure there's going to be, you know, three people out there who are going to go, yeah, I could have a use for this. You know, if you want to build a studio on the cheap, or, you know, if you're a YouTuber or something, maybe a few people are gonna have a use for it. But this reeks of the kind of devices that the Japanese companies put out because no one in the company has the guts to say we shouldn't do it. There's such consensus all the time. They put out tons of products that don't really make sense. And sometimes one of them is brilliant, and I don't think that's it. Do you guys think there's something to it?
It reminds me of the Sony Bloggy, which was like you looked at it and it made sense in its own self, right? It was actually an improvement on the flip cam, and it was a nice machine and had some cool features. But nobody almost nobody found a use for it. It just didn't catch on. And I feel the same way about this one. I look at it and I'm like, yeah, it's all self-consistent. 12 megapixel CMOS can do some, you know, live stream feature. That's cool. All of these things are cool, but I'm not sure who this is for.
Like,
who
is YouTube stars?
No, because YouTube stars want to have that external mic, right? You know, they want to up their production value. They want to use better stuff.
Yeah, $300.
Well, you can have this as one of your cameras and another one, you know, so you can switch and then use another source for your mic. But still,
but then why not just use your phone at that point? Like, I know
because there you already have the stand and you have the monitor and. Nice. Yeah, no, I can't even convince myself.
Your phone usually has a lot more compression than these cameras offer. $300 is where I'm getting stuck on this. Because $300 for this device, you're getting closer and closer to getting an actual camcorder. And then you could have a lot more functionality, including external mic-ins and things like that. The thing I'm looking at with this, with any optimism, is the fact that maybe Canon is redesigning what the form factor is for these camcorders. Because right now, we still have this kind of antiquated concept of what it's supposed to be, because they're still based in the shape of this idea that a tape would go in. I like that Canon's messing with the form factor, but I don't see this product being like a monstrous hit. It just seems like it's got a very limited functionality, and it's not necessarily going after the GoPro crowd because it looks a little too large for that. It doesn't seem like it's going for that, you know, helmet cam kind of thing. So it's just, maybe it's for police officers? I can't figure this out. Like, it sits outside? Well,
the one thing it has going for it, I guess the lens is kind of big enough that you would get decent picture quality compared to other devices, but even that, I don't think would convince a lot of people.
It's a Zune. Sorry.
Oh, wow.
It's a nice piece of hardware that's too late. I really sat here and tried
to love it because I like, there's nothing wrong with any of these specs. I was like, this is cool for, who is it cool for?
It sounds like Canon, you know, the guys at Canon were sitting down thinking, what can we do? You know, something cool and new and different. And then you design something weird by committee and that's what you get.
Yeah. All right. If you are not using a 3D printer, you're wasting money, ladies and gentlemen. Michigan Technical University team led by, I don't know if it was led by, but the spokesperson was Joshua Pierce, an associate professor there, have done a study using a RepRap 3D printer. They found 20 items on Thingiverse that were sort of like the kinds of things you would use commonly around the house. And they quantified how much it would cost to print those out versus how much it would cost to buy them at retail. They accounted for print time. They accounted for the energy that you would use in the 3D printer, the filament consumption, the materials you would need to supply the printer. And they compared it to the lowest internet market prices they could find, as well as higher internet market prices for similar products without shipping costs. They said, we're going to be conservative. We're not even going to count shipping here because maybe you can get free shipping on a lot of these things for whatever reason. It cost them a total, with all of this, of $18 to print all 20 items. And the lowest retail cost for these 20 items was $312. The highest was $1,943. None of that includes customization, which you can do when you print it yourself. So they estimate that a RepRap, which can actually print its own replacement parts too, by the way, pays for itself at best 4 months, at worst 2 years. So, Patrick Beja, if you haven't bought a 3D printer, do you feel like you're just throwing money away?
I don't quite get that feeling yet, but maybe it's because I don't know any better. But, you know, the thing that really got me in that description was the fact that it can print its own replacement parts. This feels like, you know, Terminator. So, yeah. But anyway, no, I'm a huge, huge fan of the idea of 3D printers, and I can't wait until they become a little bit more consumer friendly to have one in my house and start printing stuff, just stuff all the time everywhere. And I didn't realize it was so cheap. And I don't know that, you know, this argument, this study they made sort of assumes that you're going to be printing those 20 items because you're going to need them in those 4 months to 2 years. You're not necessarily going to need all of that, but even if you don't, it's certainly, I mean, it proves the fact that it's cheaper to print stuff than to buy stuff, which wasn't a given for many people. You know, I wasn't even sure of it. So, it makes me even more enthusiastic about the thing.
I can't wait for 3D printers to print stuff that I have to replenish regular printers with, like photo paper, that sort of thing. I was looking into buying like a kind of nicer photo printer that could print larger size prints. And, you know, the more you get into it, the more people will say in reviews, well, you got to have the fancy photo paper or it's not even worth the price of the printer. And then it turns into like, oh, gosh, you're going to spend at least several hundred dollars a year on this stuff that's in addition to the printer that is always, you know, you're always running out of. Wouldn't it be neat to have a 3D printer that could print the stuff to help my regular printer that does one thing really well?
Why don't you print your regular printer with the 3D printer then?
Even better.
But then I still need the photo paper.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm getting at, right?
Photo paper requires a treatment. I'm not sure if you'd be able to print out photo paper or not. I don't think that's just one.
That's one example.
You could print
something.
The machine that creates the machine that could do that.
I want to print food. I want to be able to print food.
There is the 3D printed pizza.
How about replacement razors? Those things are expensive.
I just love this idea. Like, okay, when you go to college,
yeah.
If they just go, here's your 3D printer. So you don't have to buy all those stupid things. Like, here's your shower caddy, and you need to make sure you have this for your phone case. There's a jeweler organizer, a spoon holder, these stupid little things you have to buy either when you go to college or you own a home. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to buy a spoon holder. Print it out.
A shower curtain.
Yes.
And the rings.
The second you get your first apartment, you're like, I got to get a shower curtain. Like, this is the thing you would buy when you get an apartment or you have a dorm.
Wait a second. They printed a shower curtain?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like a mess. Oh,
you know, this 5 minutes of conversation has been more exciting and imagination-inducing than the last 6 months in the tech industry. I'm so excited for 3D printers. It's going to be awesome.
Shower curtains for everybody. But seriously, doesn't your 3D printer have to be really big in order to print out a shower curtain?
I'm not sure how they got it out, but it was a regular size rep wrap, and they were able to do it. So maybe it was in multiple sheets or something. I don't know. The ring's easy though. I can see how it would do that.
You can make beaded curtains pretty easy, I'd imagine. Just kind of print them out. See?
Or you could buy a shower curtain for like $5.
But printing it would be less. Right? That's the whole point of this is that you can buy a shower curtain for $5. You can buy all this stuff for $312.
Jason's like, I don't know about all of this.
I don't need to print a shower curtain.
And for you skeptics out there, they even accounted for things where the printer broke down. They said, we're going to account for 20% of the things you try to print breaking. It was still cheaper to print it yourself than to go out and buy it. Accounting for your time, accounting for your energy, accounting for all that stuff.
Yeah. Jason, you're the guy who's going to complain about the hyper local news on Google now, aren't you?
No, honestly, I think 3D printing technology is great. But, you know, $5 for a shower curtain, I'm just saying, that's not that bad.
Fair enough.
It mounts up, man.
I guess it does.
Penny poor, pound wise. I don't know. Penny wise, pound foolish. Let's talk about HP launching an Android PC. Those words don't belong together, do they?
They don't go together, really? But HP is launching a PC and it's running Android 4.2. It's called the HP Slatebook 10-H010NRX2 PC.
Hot.
That's the best name I think we've had all year for PCs. $480. You get a 10-inch tablet with a keyboard dock. The tablet is powered by an NVIDIA Tegra 4 with Intel HD graphics, 2 gigabytes of RAM, 16 gigabytes of SSD space there. And this device was going to launch in August, but actually it's available right now on HP's site. And HP, you know, the old-timey PC maker, is calling it a PC. Is this device actually a PC? If somebody like HP is saying it's a PC, Patrick?
I should have a joke about calling stuff a different way, and then, you know, that means that's what they are. Yeah, sure. A PC is a personal computer that looks like a computer. It's a tablet. Come on. It's an Android tablet with a keyboard. The iPad can have a keyboard. I don't know I'm not sure who this is for. And besides, there are already a lot of tablets that you can add a keyboard to, right? So...
Oh, yeah. By the way, Psych4 corrects me. It is August. It's supposed to launch in August. It's August 1st. I'm completely out of my mind when it comes to calendars. Maybe I have to sync my phone again.
Well, I think the story that was published yesterday. July 31st, so I think it did get here slightly just under the wire before August. I think HP is trying to do a little semantic battle here. A lot of people have said that HP as a PC maker is in the past. So maybe they just thought, what if we call all of our tablets with keyboards PCs? And then we could say the PCs are still the future and we make great PCs like this Android tablet that's a PC. Like, it's kind of silly, but the same thing. It doesn't cost them anything.
You know, the thing that would they could have created... too much light. Sorry. They could have created an Android PC and make it super cheap. I think that would have been interesting because for $480, you can get a full-fledged PC.
Sure.
As you were saying, the Nexus 7 is now $200. So sure, it's smaller, but you know it's less than half the price. I think that's the bigger issue there. It's way too expensive to be an Android PC, even if you want to call it that.
Yeah, but can it really truly replace a personal computer? I mean, if you have Android, it's a very serviceable operating system. If you have a bunch of apps, that works too. But can you really do full-fledged work that you would on a PC on something like this? And if HP's calling it that, is that really good enough?
No, but you know, for some people, it could be enough. But those people would need it to be cheaper. There's also a point to be made that the simplicity, which I'm sure you know, the ghost of Steve Jobs would approve of. Simplicity is actually an asset. It's actually a good thing for some people who don't want something completely overblown and would do things they don't need. So I'm sure if you make it into a proper desktop kind of, you know, PC, adaptable PC, and you make it cheap enough, it could be interesting to some people. In that state, I'm not so sure.
All right. With that, we shall fire up the randomizer. Human teleportation, more impractical than we thought. You probably thought it was pretty impractical already. I don't know. But physics students from the University of Leicester have done some calculations, and it's all about bandwidth. They would need 2.6 by 10 to the 42nd bits to transfer a human from the surface of the Earth into orbit. And that would take longer than the current age of the universe to generate enough power to do it.
And that assumes no packet loss, right?
Right, exactly. I don't know if they included error correction or not. That's a good question.
They kind of mentioned the fact that packet loss could infer, you know, catastrophic, you know, incidents on the teleport, because you need to destroy the body somewhere and reconstruct it somewhere else. But still, you know, I call reindeer poo on this story. It's not proper journalism, because they're using current technology when everybody knows that proper science fictional technology would require teleportation technology would require quantum coupling, which they're not talking about in that study. So obviously it has no basis in proper fiction. So
just reverse the polarity. Is that what you're saying?
Basically, yes. Exactly.
I like down at the bottom of the story where they say that one way around this problem could be multiple parallel streams, like a data torrent. So you could be... You could become a torrent.
A torrent of Tom.
I wouldn't worry about the packet loss so much. I'd worry about the pocket loss. You know, whatever you have in your pockets, is it going to appear on the other side? That's a big worry.
I worry about the leg loss.
The limb loss, yeah.
Yeah. What's inside the, yeah. I like, now that I'm thinking of torrents, though, like, can you imagine the piracy implications here?
But what happens with that, when that one guy stops seeding that torrent, right? Like, you're stuck at 99%.
Forever. Yeah.
You're like, no, turn your computer back on.
What happened to your grandpa? I'm so sorry. Yeah, they stopped seeding him, so.
it was surprising to realize how much time it would take to transfer the data that would be required, you know, to reconstruct a human body. I don't know how far they went. They were talking about, you know, cellular, molecular, atomic levels. But what was it, like, longer than the age of the universe?
Yeah.
That's a long time. So that was a surprise there.
Talk about lag, you know. The progress bar is not going to help speed things up there.
I've got to be late for my meeting, but I'm not.
Hold on. I'm transferring myself. Let's see what's incoming, shall we?
Oh, incoming. No calendar. Never mind. I missed that. Sorry.
There just wasn't much.
Yeah.
Moto X later today.
All right, there we go.
Well, there's that.
There
we go.
And then incoming.
Woo! There was supposed to be a Dell decision, but that's still
on. Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll see if that goes.
That would have been on the calendar, but...
Let's talk about this email from George, shall we?
Okay.
Hey, y'all. Yesterday, you guys were talking about OpenTable taking payments for meals you eat at a restaurant. You asked how a restaurant would know if you paid. It's simple. Everyone who wants to pay just brings a fast-track transponder, and the restaurant owners will have a transponder reader at the exit. Yes, people will look ridiculous wearing one of these on their belts or in their pockets, but it will solve the issue.
What?
Actually,
no.
I don't know. That's not such a bad idea.
Yes, it is. You have to have an extra thing on your person or in your purse that you remember. What if you forget it at home and then there's
this
issue?
No, you use the fast track system, but it's built into your phone. So it's just a scanner.
It's like NFC.
You just have your phone in your pocket.
That's the use.
Guys. I listened to the thing yesterday. we live in the age of the internet where, you know, servers can send information to different devices. When you pay, the server sends the information to the cashier, you know, to the device they have at the restaurant, and your table lights up and it says, that guy has paid. So when you leave, they just have to glance at the screen and they know you paid.
Really? And these like Michelin star restaurants that you live near and eat at all the time, I presume, are going to want a light in the middle of their table? I don't think so.
No. Not on the table. On the, you know, on the near the exit where they take your reservations.
They should just pat you down and make sure you didn't steal a muffin too. You know? Why not? Let's just go crazy.
It works.
I got another email from Reed. This is in response to our discussion the other day about buffering and YouTube. He says, another way people might want to look at fixing their buffering problems with many services is with a free IPv6 tunnel. Hurricane provides these for free, but so do other companies. It effectively proxies their traffic behind that provider and allows them to access services such as Netflix and YouTube via IPv6. Even if their native provider doesn't support it. I know from my house, where Verizon has problems with YouTube, adding a tunnel made everything fly.
Yeah, and he actually told me about their... He didn't want to put it in the main email because I don't think he wanted to come off as just promoting himself, but tunnelbroker.net is where you can do the IPv6 tunneling from Hurricane Electric. But if you just do IPv6 tunnel... sort of a search, you probably be able to find one anywhere. That's pretty nifty. And it's free. You can just do it. All of a sudden, you're tunneled. That's pretty awesome. Thanks, Reed. Appreciate the tip off. And thank you, Patrick Beja, for joining us today. A pleasure, as always. What's going on that the folks might be interested in that you're up to, besides being happily married now?
Well, that's very interesting, and I'm sure a lot of people are interested in that. But you know what? I will take these few seconds not to talk about me, but to talk about Jason, because I went to his Kickstarter page earlier today to check out the Yellow Gold second album Kickstarter page. And I was expecting, because of his old nickname, Raygun, I was expecting some weird techno electronica thing. It's actually... pretty awesome. I'm sorry, Jason. I didn't expect it to be that cool. It's absolutely awesome folk rock music. And, you know, I was going to support it anyway, but now I'm actually very happy I did support it. And you're way too shy and you don't talk about yourself enough, Jason. You should promote it more. It's awesome music, and you should all go to Kickstarter and support Jason. I love it.
I appreciate that, Patrick. You totally did not have to do that. That's very nice of you, though. Thank you.
I know I didn't. I just, it was super cool. So there you go.
Thanks, man.
And you're into stretch goal territory now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, it funded in 48 hours. And now we're firmly in the going to the first stretch goal. Yeah, I mean, I could never have expected that it would be as successful as it has been. I'm very, very happy, obviously.
But you know, the thing is, you know, I've been following you on many networks for a long time. And for some reason, you don't promote yourself. You avoid promoting yourself so much. I didn't realize you had that, you know, that your music was exactly what I like. Oh. So you should do it more. Anyway, so there you go.
Well, thanks, Patrick. I appreciate that. And PatrickBeja.com. There we go.
Stop.
Boom.
Yellow gold is what you search for on Kickstarter.
There you go.
After you've gone to Patrick Beja.
Exactly.
Also, go to technewstoday.reddit.com because that's the place where your voice can be heard in the show. You could submit links there, vote them up, vote them down. Get a lot of good randomizer ideas in there. If you ever see a good randomizer thing in there, throw it in there. That's one of the ways we create our lineup every day. Technewstoday.reddit.com. Don't forget, you can find us on the web anytime, day or night, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, and give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. It's CNET week on Tech News Today, apparently, because Brian Cooley is going to join us tomorrow. We'll see you then.